RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered a podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, which we've got a lot of discussion and commentary on the various episodes. And boy, it seems like it's been like a month since we talked, Josh, because they had like 3 weeks off.
Oh, I've been jonesing to talk about it. I've missed it a lot. You know, we were talking about it so consistently there for a while that, you know, I started getting some withdrawals. So I'm glad it's back. I'm really excited.
Yeah, this is great. We're in the home stretch for season one here. Today we're going to be talking about episode 20, and there's only three more episodes left until the season finale. And just based on, you know, tidbits we're hearing, rumors and stuff swirling around, I am very excited about what's coming up. But we're not here to talk about like what's coming up. We don't want to spoil anybody for that. So we are going to be talking about episode 20, Home Invasion, which aired originally on April 24th, 2013. And Josh, you want to give everybody a little rundown in case it's been a while since they saw the episode or they missed it here?
Yeah, well, it was an action-packed one. The smell of vengeance is in the air. So Diggle, he's training with Oliver because he really wants to catch Deadshot. That is weighing heavily on his mind. He just wants to finally get his revenge. And revenge is really what he's out for. So we can get into that. Also, Laurel, she's helping this family to prosecute this mobster named Edward Rasmus. But any good mobster in Starling City, Rasmus isn't just going to let him get away with you know, being witnesses or, you know, trying to prosecute him. So he hires this sadistic assassin who they call, I don't know if they actually say this in the show, but they refer to him as Mr. Blank. Mr. Blank. So he's hired to take the family out so there is nobody to go after Rasmus. The parents, they don't live too long. That's not too much of a spoiler because that happens pretty quickly. But their little boy, he actually gets away from Mr. Blank. So Laurel tries to protect him. Okay, and meanwhile, Deadshot returns to Starling City, and at the same time, Mr. Blank is hunting this survivor, this little boy. So Oliver's got to make a decision. Okay. He's kind of forced with a choice here at one point. He either helps Diggle to stop Deadshot, or he protects Laurel and this boy. So that's kind of what the whole thing leads up to. And then, of course, back on the island, Oliver is being trained by Shadow in the ways of archery and in the ways of love.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They were doing a little shadow dancing. So, yeah, lots of parallels on this show. All right, so before we get into all of the discussion about all the cool plot twists and things that were going on, the references and everything like that, we've got a little bit of news here. Josh, I guess you saw Stephen Amell was on the Tonight Show, you were telling me. I go to bed early. I don't stay up late to see things like this, and I'm sure it's online, but I just hadn't gotten a chance. But what was he on? I guess he was just talking about the rest of the season.
Yeah, he was there to kind of promote it. You know, it seems like as the season's ramping up, Arrow just seems to be everywhere. I see it in magazine articles and Entertainment Weekly. I see it online. I mean, I see it. It's the popularity is just seeming to increase dramatically. So he was making an appearance on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And, you know, they did their typical little small talk. They talked about some of the other projects he did. They, brought up some nude scenes he's done in the past, which, you know, I'm sure those kind of shows always bring that stuff up, you know, to get people's attention. But then, of course, he started talking about Arrow and the rest of the season and how the pace and the action is just going to get real intense. And you know, he got me real excited about it. I mean, I'm all about the hype in those things. But it was a nice little interview. But he also was there to promote one other thing. He is the face of this benefit that they're having from an organization, and this organization is it's called we'll call it F Cancer.
F Cancer, okay.
F Cancer. So, and you can if you want to know the
F blank 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 cancer.
That's right. That's right. You can find out more about this, including the full title of the organization at letsfcancer.com.
Okay.
That's and it's an organization to obviously to raise money for cancer awareness. And Stephen Amell on the Tonight Show was talking about how he got involved in that. And I guess, you know, his mom had cancer or has cancer. I'm not sure. At some point when she was going through treatment, she and him took a picture, and he told her to, you know, take the picture, and the two of them would be holding up their middle finger. And she's like, no, I can't do that. You know, he says, come on, you know, cause this is what we're doing. We're fighting against this, you know? And he posted it online, you know, on Twitter or Facebook or something like that. And the organization, the F Cancer, group there, the woman that was in charge of that, got wind of this and contacted him, to see if he would be interested in kind of helping them out. So they're doing you know, fundraiser, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a charity fundraiser. Uh-huh.
Yeah, on May 9th in Los Angeles. So it's hosted by Stephen Amell. So it's at 9:30 p.m. and you can find out more information on their website, I'm sure. And they also have a Facebook page too. If you Google that, and you should be able to find out a lot more about it. But sounds like a good organization that is has a good positive attitude about the whole thing and is staying strong by helping each other. So
that's good.
I was impressed with his whole, you know, just his whole spiel about the whole thing and how passionate he seemed about it. So
he does seem to be involved, and a couple of people from the show do seem to be involved in charities and you know, doing things like you know, hosting fundraisers and stuff like this. So that's really good to see. I'm glad they're not, you know, you're not just hearing all this, you know, stupid stuff about, oh, you know, they were caught in a drunken binge and all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is really positive kind of stuff to see from celebrities. So that's great.
It is.
Hey, just as a side note, I was with all the press that came from, I think it was WonderCon, in the break here. I saw an interview with the guy that plays Quentin Lance. Paul Blackthorne. Now, I knew he was British, but oh my gosh, he does a really good American accent for the show, kind of that Chicago cop style voice, I guess, you know, whatever Lance has. Because when he's doing the interview, he's got this really British accent. So, you know, he's talking about everything, and I'm like, oh my gosh, was that the same guy? So,
And I did not know he was British until WonderCon. That was the first time I had any indication that he was British, because I would have had no idea. He does a great a Yank accent, I guess they would say.
Yeah, he had done the same sort of accent. He was the star of a short-lived series about a cop or a detective that uses magic called the Dresden Files.
I remember that.
And I think it was it might have been a WB or UPN show or something like that. And he was doing the same sort of accent for that. But I guess he's done a couple things with his real English accent, but not a lot of stuff that we would have seen. So if you guys haven't heard his actual accent, just go to YouTube and Google interviews with Paul Blackthorne. And it's interesting just to see these actors that you get used to hearing in a role, and then they, you know, but that's not their real accent. So
I should have known he was British just by his name, Blackthorne. I mean, that's a perfect British name.
Yeah. See also Batman and Man of Steel, two other Brits playing roles in superhero movies. So they're both British as well. All right. Anyway, enough about that. There's nothing British about this episode here. It is called Home Invasion, and as is the style of the Arrow show, the title refers to multiple elements from the show, and it is taken very literally for this episode. We have a slew of home invasions through all of the different storylines here. I guess the first one we see is when Mr. Blank comes to find the boy that Laurel's taken care of. He busts into to Laurel's home, which I was asking my wife if she knew what kind of insurance policy Laurel had. This would be the if I'm counting right, the third time that her apartment's been broken into. First time was with China White when she came in and Oliver defended her. And then the second time, Cyrus Vange came in with his taser and zapped her, and Tommy found the arrow with the recording on it. And then this time with Mr. Blank, who narrowly escapes with his own life. It was very convenient. Oliver actually missed. Well, he didn't really miss. He knocked the gun out of his hand, I guess. But this guy's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I got to say, if I was Laurel, you know, she doesn't seem interested in leaving her apartment. It didn't seem to bother her too much. But at the very least, you know, I would invest maybe in a metal door, you know, maybe some
big
bulletproof windows,
yeah,
something. She seemed pretty capable of taking care of herself. I actually really really liked that scene. I had one. I don't want to say a gripe because it doesn't really bother me for dramatic purposes, you know, but I really like how she was smart enough to know that when he was peeking through the keyhole there, that he wasn't who he said he was. You know, she had that thing where she looked at his badge and figured out that he wasn't a real lieutenant. Mm-hmm. But my one gripe is, Dag Nabbit, she monologued.
Oh yeah,
she monologued before she shot at him, and then she lost her chance. And so, if she hadn't done that, she probably could have taken him out right there. But yeah, what are you going to do? Say, like I said, for dramatic purposes, it works for me.
Well, one out of two isn't bad. She wasn't wearing a cape, so
that's you know, true. That's good.
Second rule: no capes.
No fishnets yet either.
No fishnets yet. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The other thing that I noticed about that is, she's apartment 305, which in, you know, if we're going by real world standards, that would be the third floor. Mr. Blank jumps out the window at the end of the scene, too. It's like, okay, wow. This guy's pretty tough if he can.
Well, Oliver jumped in, right?
Well, yeah, but when he busted into Moira's office on the, you know, whatever, the 500th floor of Queen Consolidated. I mean, where did he come from then? You know, he comes in off the roof, so.
His tightrope arrow.
Yeah, I mean.
Now we don't see, you know, but it's got to be there.
He does. I mean, you know, he's shooting those arrows. Or like, there was the one, I think it was back at the way at the beginning of the season. He's got that arrow that shoots, I think it was a season opener, where he shoots across and, you know, he glides in and out to get to the bad guy and stuff, and
yeah,
you know, from the building across the street and all that. So I don't, you know, he's got trick arrow stuff, but I mean, here's just a guy with a gun. He's, you know, for all accounts, he's just a hired killer. You know, he's not really trained that we know of. I mean, he seems to be able to handle himself. He's got some sort of, you know, he's got different moves. Obviously he has some sort of, you know, acupuncture, acupressure, ninja training or something like that. Oh, and, well, I know we'll get to more about him later. So, there was another funny bit when I think it was right before the it was after the invasion when Detective Lance comes over and is questioning her and you know, wants to make sure she's okay. And Tommy's like, "Oh, it's okay. I'll stay here and protect her. You know, I'm here most nights anyway."
It's like, yeah.
Oh, probably shouldn't have said that.
He says there was probably a better time to say that. That's or right. Tell you that.
And he's like,
and Detective Lance said, "Yeah, no, probably not."
No. he's a curmudgeon. He's gruff and curmudgeon-y, but he's funny.
Yeah, and we can, I don't know, we may talk about this eventually, but I continually get this feeling that he knows who Oliver is or what Oliver's doing.
Lance?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about it that I think like he suspects him or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you get that vibe a little bit at the end of the episode. And we can talk about that a little bit later. If I forget, remind me, we can bring that up because there is something there. So let's see. So Laurel's home gets invaded. Oliver's home gets invaded, which is
now the family that, you know, that got killed, their home got invaded too.
Right. Yep. That was creepy. And of course, when we first see the bad guy, Mr. Blank, he's this African-American gentleman, comes up, says he's got paperwork for them to sign, and comes in with his briefcase, and he opens the briefcase like he's getting the paperwork out and fires the gun through the briefcase with the silencer and kills the dad. Mm. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's Gunn from Angel. The actor's name is J. August Richards, and he, I think he showed up, I want to say he showed up season 3 through the end of the series of Angel, but I'm like, no, that can't be, because I saw that he was going to be on S.H.I.E.L.D., and it was him, so it's like, wow, okay, so he's on this, and in the same week that it was announced that he, well, it's not official, I guess, because the S.H.I.E.L.D. show isn't even picked up yet, but he may have a role on S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. And since that's got Joss Whedon behind it, they've worked together, obviously, on Angel. So, but that was pretty cool. I haven't seen him do stuff since Angel. He's in some interviews I read, though, he's doing a bunch of other stuff. I mean, he's been on cameos on all sorts of other sci-fi genre shows and stuff like that. So Oliver's house gets broken into, which is the whole end of the episode, the family,
the climax, yeah,
the family's house gets broken into. I think that's everybody in the present day, right? That was all the characters we were visiting.
That's what all the ones that Mr. Blank
attacks
invaded. Yeah,
right. Okay, in the flashback. The airplane fuselage where Shadow and Slade Wilson and Oliver are hanging out gets invaded. It's their home basically, right? So it gets invaded by Fires and his men. Yao Fei finds them at the end of the episode, and it seems really weird. The thing that struck me weird about it, I mean, he kind of comes in, he doesn't say hi, and it's like, hey everybody, I'm here. He just kind of walks in. And Oliver's like really loud. He just shouts, Yao Fei. And I'm like, dude, keep your voice down. Shut up. You know, it just seemed awkwardly weird. And of course,
you know, that fuselage is starting to feel a little bit like Three's Company, you know, it's with the three of them kind of living in there, having this weird kind of little love triangle. And then, you know, Mr. Hurley comes in knocking at the door, and it's Yao Fei. And it was very odd. I mean, I didn't mind it. It was interesting because you still don't really know what the deal with Yao Fei is there.
Right. And what I was going to say, you see him as Mr. Hurley. I thought he was more like Larry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're probably right.
So anyway, and then, you know, he's like, oh, how did you escape? And of course, you know, I did not. And Fires and his men come busting in. And then it's not Fires that says the final line. It's Yao Fei, right? He's right to Oliver. What your time on this island is limited, or is over, or something like that.
I think he said it was over.
Yeah. So
not sure what's going on there. So
they're going to take him off to another island, and then he's going to come back to this island. I don't know. That's
well, I have my suspicions about that, and that's based on some other stuff outside of the show. You know, some of the comics and stuff that I've looked into. I think that might be a possibility.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So I don't really know. I mean, I think I came across a comic where he was fighting as a vigilante, but he wasn't in Starling City and he wasn't on the island. So I thought, well, this is kind of weird. So, you know, did he leave the island and then come back, or so I don't know. I don't know if he did or not. So
is this one of the current comics, or this is an older one you were looking at?
Oh, you know, I wasn't prepared for that question. So I can't recall, oh, okay. But it was from the show. It wasn't like a Green Arrow comic. It was a Arrow TV show comic.
Oh, okay. So, all right. So it was probably one of the digital ones or one of the reprints of the digital ones they're doing, just called Arrow. Not Green Arrow. Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, in the Green Arrow comics, historically, he's been in Starling City. For a while, he's out of Seattle, which is what I was just going to say. But
right.
You know, that's...
So, and, you know, they got invaded in the fuselage, and they were planning, before they got invaded, they were actually planning to invade Fire's camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he was being trained. So that was another sort of a side invasion.
Yeah. And then you made this, you put in our notes here, this really interesting, like I hadn't thought of this element. So, you know, the invasions that we've talked about so far, quote unquote invasions that we've talked about, mm-hmm. invasion into one's personal space. But the last one that you came up with, I thought this was really interesting, is you have Roy, you know, in the police department trying to find out where the vigilante is, you know, by A, just asking the cops, and they don't provide the information to him, so he steals their radio so that he can go and find the vigilante. He's telling the cops he wants to do it because he wants to help bring the vigilante down, but we know from previous episodes and listening to him talk to Thea in this one that he feels connected to Oliver in some way. He doesn't, of course, know that it's Oliver, but he's connected to him from having been saved when Arrow saved him from the Savior
right.
a couple episodes ago. So you know, so he's kind of looking to invade Arrow's home, and I was like, wow, that's a really interesting way to look at it. Which, you know, again, it hadn't occurred to me. He's you know, searching for a way to basically, you know, break, you know, find out where his hideout is, I guess, you know, and break in, which is
yeah.
silly because he could have had a job there, but he flaked out, and never showed up.
Well, and I think, you know, I mean, maybe it's a stretch to include that as part of the invasion, but as I was kind of thinking of all the you know, the themes that are threaded through the story, I thought, you know, well, why did they put Roy and Thea in this particular one? But that's kind of what Roy's doing. You know, I mean, first he invades the police station, and he must have been really bad at it. I mean, it was, I guess it was odd that he was there, you know, and Detective Lance is like, what are you doing here? And he had this kind of lame story. He's like, oh, just checking on the vigilante, or, you know, really want to catch him. And he, you know, I must have seen him take the radio, but that's then what I was thinking. I mean, you know, what's he going to do when he finds him? I'm thinking, yeah. How's he going to find him? What's his plan? I mean, he seems like he might have some sort of plan. I mean, he can't just, you know, when he finds him, he doesn't go, hey, so can I give you a hand? Or, you know, so I figure maybe he was trying to, you know, get into, you know, the hideout, or he doesn't know it's the hideout, but, you know, just kind of mm-hmm. get into Arrow's life. And I don't know. Like I said, it might be a stretch for invasion, but it just kind of felt like it was that sort of same idea.
It thematically, I think it is. Yeah, definitely. I think there's a good element for that. And, you know, maybe he thought that he could, well, because the reason he took the radio was because so he could listen to find out where the vigilante had been spotted and try to show up at that place to, you know, like you said, talk to him. But, you know, how would that go? I'm your biggest fan. so, and of course,
fly home, Roy.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work out that way for him because the cops realize, well, Lance realizes that, you know, his radio's missing, and it's like, well, where did that go, I wonder? So they set a little trap for him to get him there. But interestingly enough, you know, Thea says, well, you know, I think I understand and I care about you, so I'm gonna help you. Which is interesting. I think that there's going to be something more to this, you know, because we've discussed before, Thea's nickname is Speedy, which is the name of Green Arrow's original partner. Roy Harper is the alter ego for Speedy, Green Arrow's original partner. So basically these two characters on the show make up, you know, two sides of Green Arrow's sidekick. Yeah. At least from the comics. So it's, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it seems very obvious that that is what they do. They kind of team these two characters up. And, you know, again, by the end of the season, pretty much everybody but the mom may know that Oliver is Green Arrow.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. And you know, there's other ways they could kind of play it, too, with those two, because there was in the comics more than one Speedy, and one of them was a girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Am I thinking right?
Yeah. Mia Mia Dearden, which is Thea's middle name is Dearden. So nice link to that. But yeah, I was like, I think Green Arrow Volume 3.
So maybe, and this is like way far off speculation, but you know, maybe something happens to Roy and Thea kind of takes up the cause, or like you said, maybe they just work together and those two together will be the one Speedy, or I don't know. I'm kind of digging how they do the, how they're working that particular character in. I hope he does kind of find him and, he kind of takes him under his wing or, quiver or whatever you'd say.
And how about this? Maybe at some point, you know, they do get brought on. Maybe they don't know who Arrow is, but he finds out about them and allows them to help out. And he calls them his Teen Titans. That might be kind of cool, too.
That's interesting.
Could see a little leeway like that. So,
That would give him another opportunity to bring in another DC character who has no superpowers. You could do a Robin or a Nightwing kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, definitely. So
that'd be a lot of speculation in that, but that's fun. So that's kind of why I like that character, because there's so many different possibilities for that. And you know, the going after a guy on the list each week, I mean, that could potentially get very mundane. It could get very repetitive, and so you gotta take it off into way different directions like this. Well,
and it was interesting how they did that this week, because really he was doing a list, a guy. I mean, whether or not he is physically on the list, I mean, this is definitely a bad guy in the Starling City world. This Edward Rasmus character, and so Oliver starts off by going after him because he, you know, finds out that, you know, he's involved with this this plot, and the family's killed. So not only does he have to deal with Mr. Blank, who's actually doing the hits, but he does have to deal with his boss Rasmus at some point as well. But then you've also got the added issues with Deadshot showing up as well. And just if we can get off on just a little tangent here, I was, as I'm watching the opening credits, you know, they list the whatever the six or seven actors that are, you know, the featured performers, and then they go into the guest stars, which for this season still include Felicity and Roy Harper and Yao Fei and Slade Wilson and all those people. There is just we had a ton of characters to deal with. You had the three queens and the two lances and only one Merlin, right? You didn't have the Merlin Senior to deal with in this episode. But then on the island, you had Fires and all his men and Shadow and Yao Fei and Slade Wilson. And then you had Roy Harper back in the present and Deadshot again and Mr. Blank and the bad guys and the family. And it's like, holy moly, I mean, we've got 20 characters we're dealing with, and they're cutting between the different storylines. And I think that this episode actually did a really good job of keeping everybody having something to do, even if it was only a little bit. I mean, by the time we got to Roy's story, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He was going to be in this, too. And it's like, oh, great. Wow. I mean, how much time are we going to have to do his story? He had very little part in it. I think maybe three or four scenes total.
Not many, but they made them count.
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't just kind of filler stuff. I mean, like, you know, for you to be able to point this out, that even his scenes dealt with the thematic issue kind of that we're talking about for the show. I think that was, I think the writers did a really good job of bringing all these characters together. But just like with the DC Comics, you know, we're going to get to a point probably in the second season where, you know, we've got four, five, six different storylines going on. We're going to have all these characters, and we need to kind of keep checking in with them. And, you know, it is called Arrow. We do need to kind of keep moving that character along. But, you know, a lot of these other characters are really compelling with the stories that that they've got going.
Yeah, I agree.
So while Roy's at the police station, Lance, you know, realizes that he's kind of, I guess you could say, infatuated with the Arrow character, the vigilante. And Lance really wants to, you know, do kind of a scared straight thing with this boy. And so he takes him down to the morgue, just like, you know, any good detective should do, right? And shows him the body of someone that Arrow killed. And it was the 26th person that Arrow killed. So we've talked a lot on the show about, wow, how many people has he killed and stuff like that. And 26 seems to be putting it really low by my estimation.
Really? You think so?
Well,
I was kind of shocked. I thought it kind of seemed like a lot, but I haven't been keeping track.
Well, you just even think with Cyrus Vance, she was talking about how he knew how many arrows were in the quiver, you know, like 20 or something like that. And the fact that Ollie took them all out, and it was, you know, so I mean, right there, that could have been it. But maybe he just wounded everybody else up till then or something. I don't know. Anyway, so, you know, this is confirmation, you know, Oliver has been out there, you know, actually killing people. And, you know, Roy points out, well, you know, this guy probably deserved it. And Lance agrees, but he also points out, as I think we have before, you know, that's not how the system works. It's that's vigilante justice, and that's not proper. You know, everybody needs to have their, you know, I guess, day in court, or, you know, be at least arrested by the police, or, you know, leave it to the professionals, I guess.
So. Well, the same rights as everybody else. That's the law says so. And that's what Detective Lance's whole life is about. You know, that's his whole philosophy. That's what he does, is follow the law. So, you know, you can see where that would get under your skin. And yet he's helped, you know, Oliver's helped him so much in doing his job. But as he's been, you know, that's a whole philosophical discussion. But you're right. He was just doing the scare tactics there.
Yeah. So, yeah, because he takes the arrow and sticks it into the hole that the arrow had been in, and
everything. It's kind of gruesome.
Yeah, it was. It was a little gross. It wasn't graphic or anything on TV, but it was a little gross. So, well, let's see. What else did we have going on here? We had a lot of different characters, as you're pointing out here, breaking up in this episode. Tommy and Laurel. They've been together for a little while, and it seemed like everything was going pretty well with them. And I think it was the last episode before the break, Tommy quit the club to go and work for his dad, right? If I'm not mistaken. And so it seems like things have been going okay there. And then Tommy and Oliver have a couple discussions through this episode. Tommy knows that Laurel's in danger, so he suggests that they go stay at the Queen's residence because they, of course, quote, they have a lot of bodyguards. But what he really means is that, well, Oliver's going to be there, and I know he's a vigilante, and, you know, he's going to protect her. But by the end of the episode, he's moving out. What do you think really brought on that sudden change? I mean, was it this discussion that Oliver and Tommy had? Do you think it's just that Tommy realized that he just couldn't compete, or what do you think was going on there?
I think he was having problems with Oliver because of what Oliver's been doing, you know, the killing, I think, especially.
Yeah, because he doesn't know who he is anymore,
right,
as he had
right.
said previously.
You know, so now he's seeing, and I think this may be the first time he actually truly realized it or something, you know, when Oliver shows up at Laurel's office and, you know, Tommy finds out that they were going to go to lunch, and he comes down as soon as he heard there was danger. And, you know, this, now he realizes that Oliver is, you know, still has very strong feelings for Laurel. But that still wasn't enough for him to kind of make this move. But when, Mr. Blank comes in to the Queen's mansion and, you know, that whole climax is going on, I think he sees it in Laurel as well. You know, he sees that Laurel still has the feelings, and I think, you know, I think you're right. You know, I think he doesn't feel like he can compete with those two having those strong feelings and being as close as they still are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, frankly, I think that there's it's not, you know, his feelings are, I don't want to say vain, but I mean, they're very self-centered. He's being a little bit
sure.
kind of like a spoiled brat in this, too.
Well, fine, you know, if you're going to be around her, well, then I'm going to. Well, but,
know, so.
I mean, Oliver, I think, was really straight with him. But again, Tommy may just not be believing him because there was that during the confrontation between Oliver and Tommy. You know, Tommy's like, you know, don't you think she still loves you, or don't you, do you still love her? And it's like, it doesn't matter if I still care about her or not, you know, she's with you now. So, you know, my feelings, you know, don't play into that.
Well, and that's what he said. And Tommy, I'm sure, didn't believe him. And Tommy's probably spot on, you know, I mean, I wouldn't believe him. And I think Oliver's just fooling himself. I mean, he's been getting closer and closer to Laurel, and Tommy's not the only one that sees it. You know, Diggle sees it too,
yeah.
And Diggle calls him out on it, and even Felicity sees it. She doesn't call him out on it, but you know, he said right after Diggle left. I think it was right after Diggle left. He says something to Felicity like, you know, something on your mind or something like that, and she says, "Nothing you want to hear."
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
so I mean, she, you know, she sees it too.
And then Tommy brings up, you know, the point and says, if Laurel knew, you know, that you were the vigilante, she'd want to be with you. And, you know, she'd choose you.
I choose you.
which, you know, it's kind of that Lois Lane thing. It's, you know, it's like she couldn't give two butts about Clark Kent. But you know, Superman, oh my gosh, it's Superman. It's like, you know, as soon as, if she were to ever find out that Superman and Clark Kent are the same person, it would just blow her mind and she'd, you know, fall all over him. That's not exactly what's going on here, obviously, because I mean, she and Ollie have a backstory and have been involved and romantic and stuff together. But
well,
as they point out, they're two parts of their, you know, two different parts of their lives right now. So,
right. But if you think about the type of person that Laurel is, she is a very strong person and a person that, you know, follows her convictions and tries to do what's right and tries to fight for the weak,
uh-huh.
you know. And, she, you know, like you said, she already had past feelings and a relationship with Oliver. I mean, if she finds out that he's this vigilante, that this is – you know, not being a vigilante necessarily, but somebody that does all they can to fight for the weak, fight for the ones that can't fight for themselves. I mean, of course, that's going to be appealing to her. And Tommy knows that, you know. And
right.
What can Tommy do? You know, what does Tommy do? Tommy doesn't do anything like that. Even as much as he's changed from the party boy that he was, he's not a hero, you know. He didn't save his dad, you know. He didn't save Laurel. He didn't
right.
I mean, Laurel saved herself in the apartment when Mr. Blank came in. Tommy was protecting the little boy, which is good, you know, but
yeah.
but he didn't do anything to protect Laurel.
I was just waiting for him to scream like a girl. No offense, but you know, it's it's too bad because for a while there it looked like they were setting him up to be, you know, a good sounding board character for Oliver, you know, just kind of a, you know, his man Friday, but, you know, good friend that he could talk to and discuss stuff. And now that's just kind of torn to shreds. And,
no, I think that's good though.
I mean, I think it's from a character standpoint, I think it's going to make it more interesting, but
yeah.
I was enjoying seeing Oliver as Oliver, who had a confident that he could talk to about everything except for the Arrow stuff. And then on the vigilante side, he had Diggle
yeah.
that he could talk to about all the vigilante stuff, but not necessarily about the other parts of his life, because Diggle understands the war and everything like that, that he's going yeah. through, you know, in that aspect. And Tommy understands, you know, the rich, socialite life. And,
well,
you know,
as of this week, now he has neither.
So, they're really setting stuff up for that. So, well, as you mentioned earlier, there was a scene where Dig was walking away from Ollie. So they kind of got a divorce in this episode because they set it up. It's like, hey, man, you got to be there for me to help take out Deadshot. You know, and it's like, yep, we're going to take him off. We're going to cross him off your list this week. Look, I've got it right here. It says Floyd Lawton. We know where he's going to be, and he's going to be dead. And then, of course, Laurel's in trouble. So
he kind of sounded like, you know, when you talk to a little kid, you know, and they're getting ready to do something you don't want them to do, and so you talk to them on, you know, like a really fun, positive way to try to get them to go the other way. You know, come on, come on, we can do this. Come on, look, yeah. Deadshot's here. Let's go take him out right now. Come on, where are you going? Where are you going?
he saw that Laurel was in trouble, and it's like, well, I can only get so far with Diggle, and I know I've already seen Laurel naked, so I'm gonna go take care of Mr. Blank. Ostensibly, there was a kid involved in that as well, so I think, you know, even though it really, really appeared that Oliver was doing it to save Laurel, let's just say he was doing it to save the kid. That makes I think everybody feel better about that. But
it makes him feel better.
Yeah,
I don't know that it's true though.
Yeah, but so it leaves it left Diggle exposed, so to speak, in the shootout with Deadshot, and he got a luckily he only got a black eye to show for it. He didn't get shot or anything like that. Now in So, Diggle's friend, Lila, who we'll talk a little bit about in the references section, totally called it, by the way. So her group, with this Argus group, kind of set up a sting for Lawton, and, it's like a little atrium area inside a building, and there's janitors who are actually working for Argus, and people having drinks at the tables who are actually working for Argus, and businessmen walking by who are actually working for Argus. It's like, dude, you guys stand out like a sore thumb. But Diggle's hiding in back, and Lawton doesn't fall for it. He knows exactly what's going on, so he starts shooting everybody, and we see at least two people get taken out. Now Diggle tackles, tell me if you saw this, Diggle tackles Lila to kind of get her out of the way, and she goes down, and she's down. She doesn't get up, but they don't reference anything about this again. It looks, after the fact, like she got shot, but I don't recall seeing her get shot.
Yeah, I don't think she did get shot.
But it looks like they might have, in the editing process, taken out her getting shot, because when she was laying there, her hand was across her belly, and she had this really glazed look on her eye, and I mean, yeah, Diggle tackled her, and took her down onto a tile floor to get her out of the line of fire. But, it looks like she was hurt, which is bad because, of course, she was giving Diggle a hard time about getting involved in any of this. And, of course, he ended up, I'm assuming, saving her life. I'm sure, that she's fine from this, but we just don't know.
Yeah. Well, my first reaction was that she was shot, too. That was the first thing I thought of. So that's what it looked like.
Okay.
He did save her life, but then you go back to what Deadshot said to him, because he said, well, thank you for tipping me off. You led me right to him. You really, you let me know that they were after me. So it was kind of Diggle's fault.
Right. Well, and then, Diggle's like, you're going to kill me. He's like, no, man, I'm not getting paid for this. So I'm just going to, smack you around here. So
I got to tell you, goth hair Deadshot,
yes,
is even creepier than nice Deadshot there at the beginning of the season. So.
Oh yeah, I like this. He had the great haircut. He's got his new glowing eyepiece. He had a bandolier on, and I think he had like some kind of holster set up around his waist too, which really nice. No wrist guns. I didn't see wrist guns, but he did have two guns he was using. Or no, maybe it was the other gun was he took from Diggle. I couldn't tell.
Oh boy. Boy, that went by fast. I'm not sure if he took it from him or not, but
yeah.
it was good. It was looking very Deadshot-y.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was thinking they were going to shoot him again, and then I was going to be able to say, "Well, he's dead. He's not coming back again." But nope, he escapes. He gets away. So we almost certainly will see him again, since he's so entwined with Diggle's life. But So Diggle goes back and has Felicity like stitch him up or clean up his wounds or something like that. And then Oliver comes back and is like, well, hey, I just want to let you know we got Rasmus and I killed Mr. Blank. Hey, what's going on with you? And he's like, dude, you totally left me out in the open. He's like, oh, yeah, well, see, Laurel was in trouble. And Diggle's like, you know, I ain't falling for any of that. And so, you know, I see you later. The only thing that you can do to stop me is put an arrow through me. And I'm like, oh, man, that's cold. So I'm sure he'll be back, but I think Diggle has to go away and lick his wounds a little bit because he is going where Oliver went earlier in the season. He's really letting that kind of vengeance fuel him, and it's going to burn him out inside, I think.
It is, and you see the I mean, you know, he's always kind of felt like that, and you could tell he was very emotional about that. But the moment that I knew he was kind of pushed over was toward the beginning there when they're talking about going after Deadshot, and he says, you know, that Lila's got it all set up, so they're gonna trap him and arrest him, and he says, you know, do you want him arrested? And he says no. You know,
oh yeah,
he wants him dead.
Oh, he's talking about putting him in a bag. I mean, he is.
Yeah, I mean that's pushed. That's when he really went over. You know, because before that, he was the voice of reason in the moral department.
Yeah,
you know, on Team Arrow. So I, you're right. I think that's going to start festering inside, and hopefully he can kind of come around and see the light because he's a much needed. You know,
conscience.
Support. Yeah. Conscience. Yeah, there you go. That's the word for sure.
Like the Jiminy Cricket of the group.
Oh, yeah, really like kick butt Jiminy Cricket there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. And then we've also got potentially Yao Fei, you know, kind of breaking up with the team Slade. On the island there, but it's so hard to tell because apparently he keeps switching sides. It's like, oh, you know, I'll help you, and it's like, oh no, I'm with the bad guys, but no, I'll help you go. I'm really just kidding, and no, I've led the bad guys to you. So I don't know, you know, I'm not sure where he's at.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know. So, but everybody was kind of parting their ways there. At first, I thought even Theo was gonna leave Roy when she found out about that. But instead, their bond just kind of became tighter. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. So, earlier we were talking about you were mentioning Detective Lance that you think he knows something more, or that Oliver actually is the vigilante. And so in the final scenes here, when Mr. Blank had invaded the Queen's home, Oliver, of course, the lights are out. So Oliver just kind of goes nuts and starts doing all sorts of parkour stuff over the furniture and around the stair railings and
parkour alert.
Yeah. Parkour alert. Wow. There's the one scene where, like, I don't know, they've got like a, they've got stair landings that maybe it's 10 stairs or something like that. And he just goes running and jumps, you know, just pulls his knees up to his chest and jumps off these stairs, barreling straight down at Mr. Blank on the landing below. I was like, wow, that's pretty intense. So he ends up taking out Mr. Blank with a poker. And so if you had Mr. Blank with the poker in the foyer, you would be correct.
That's good. That's even better than Lance's comment that I had thought of seconds before he said it. Death by fire poker.
Yeah. Well, and then Oliver, you know, Oliver pulls out again, not completely lame, but pretty lame excuse. It's like, oh yeah, and he points to the dead bodyguard behind him, you know, who saved his life. You know, it's like, oh, he got shot, but then he was able to stab him with this poker. You know, I distracted him and he got stabbed with the poker. And Lance is kind of like, okay. You know, I think what you were saying earlier is the read that I got off of this sequence is Lance is listening to Oliver's story and he's taking it down, but he knows something is not right. I mean, if you're a detective, I mean, all the stuff keeps happening around and to Oliver Queen. I mean, I know the guy's been gone for 5 years, but, you know, that's why would all of this bad stuff keep happening unless there was some other connection? And, you know, Vigilante seems to be looking out for him. There was really no sign of the Vigilante for this, right, other than the fact that, you know, some guy got killed, but, you know, they don't know anything else, so...
Yeah. Well, and Oliver's story, at least this case, Oliver's stories aren't always even bad. It's just kind of the way he says them. It's kind of, the guy, he shot him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
It is, it is half-hearted, I guess.
But, I don't know. It just feels like Lance knows more, than he's saying. You know, but he's not doing as much about it as he was before when he was sort of dead set on catching him.
Yeah, they didn't. They haven't talked about the. I mean, and this is probably just because they haven't brought up the phone, the Arrow phone that's got the tracker in it. That I can't remember. It's either back with Detective Lance or Laurel still got it, but. You know, that was the tracking phone, and they just didn't mention it at all in this episode. So that's, I think that may also be what seems like, well, yeah, they aren't, he's not doing any work on it. But there were so many other plot lines going on in this, they didn't have time to deal with any of that element.
Yeah. And I'm kind of glad they didn't, because there was plenty going on in this episode. I think that would have taken away from some of the pacing of the action. So,
yeah. Okay, well, any other topics here that anything else you saw in the episode that you wanted to bring up in terms of themes or anything like that?
You know, not as far as themes and stuff. I thought it was great. I really liked the way it flowed. Tons of action. Great villain. Almost sad to see him go. I wouldn't mind seeing him come back, but Mr. Blank was just creepy enough to. He was just so calm. And he would sort of talk to himself. I felt like he was doing some sort of one of those TV shows where they're redecorating something, like, you know, an HGTV or something like that. Where he goes, I like to mess things up a little bit before I kill you to make it look a little more realistic. So, well, here's the big reveal, bam! But yeah. So yeah, I liked him. But, you know, I one thing I noticed in this, and again, it's going to sound like a criticism, but we just, you know, kind of break it down what we're thinking and stuff. But notice there were a lot of little kind of snide remarks, some little side jokes, some one-liners and stuff that are typical. I actually enjoyed them, that it was a lighthearted entertainment in this drama and action stuff. But there were quite a few of them in this episode. And I just, you know, when I see stuff like that, I worry a little bit that it'll get, start getting a little too hokey if they do that too often. But it was so enjoyable in this one. I almost didn't want to mention it because I don't want it to stand out.
Yeah,
but there were some good ones. I think my favorite one was when Roy and Thea were sitting in the diner. Were they at Big Belly Burger? I wasn't paying enough attention and notice that, but
You know, I don't think they pulled back far enough that we could tell. I would guess it probably was, but
I'm just assuming that's where everybody goes unless it's a fancy dinner. But
right.
The police scanner goes off and she's like, "Is that a police radio in your pocket?" And, "No, I'm just happy to see you."
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, and things like that. Like I said, I don't mind them. I actually like stuff like that. It helps it feel a little bit more lighthearted and not so dark, because I'm not a person that likes it totally dark. But I also don't like it totally hokey. So
right.
just something to think about, but I don't didn't mind it in this one, didn't take away from it.
Yeah, due to the intensity of this episode, I think with all the killing and stuff, I think they were trying to balance it a little bit more with these funnier bits, but they didn't, you know, they didn't seem to me at least, they didn't go over the top. It wasn't slapsticky or anything like that. There were more of these lighthearted moments.
So, well, and you know what? You make a good point. I like to think of it like that because it was a pretty... graphic episode with the killings. I mean, they showed you Mr. Blank's killings there. So
yeah,
That was pretty disturbing. So yeah, it did kind of help lighten it up. Now that you say that,
yeah. Well, so just to go over some of the references, we like to point out some ties back to the comic series by DC Comics. We've got Mr. Blank to start off, which Googling him doesn't really turn up anything. There's a looks like it might be a Batman villain. Looks kind of like a KKK member or something like that. He's wearing like a sack over his head. And there's some talk about, like you said earlier on, I don't think Mr. Blank was ever actually mentioned by name in the show, but in some interviews after the fact with J. August Richards, they reveal that Mr. Blank is in fact the character's name. I think it actually was listed that way in the credits as well. It turns out that it seems that the writing staff and the producers actually were intending this villain to be a villain named Onomatopoeia, who is a Kevin Smith created Green Arrow villain, and he's the term onomatopoeia. You're a teacher, Josh, right? You can tell us what onomatopoeia is, right?
Onomatopoeia is one of my favorite words. It's a great word, but it's basically when you in a story when you put a sound effect word in it. You know, think of the old original Batman and Robin series from the 60s where they're, you know, bang, crash, boom, clang, you know, that kind of thing. That's onomatopoeia.
So it's a sound effect actually written out.
Right.
So that you can read it. Okay. So he's a character and it's a the character would actually make sound effects in that way. But I guess at some point Kevin Smith said, you know, hey, this is a, you know, he works really well as a comic character, but he doesn't work too well as a, you know, in a film or a TV show. And so they kind of read that and said, well, we'll kind of switch him around. But Onomatopoeia, I guess, was a cold-blooded killer in the same way Mr. Blank was. So that's a slight nod, I guess, to the comic book characters there. The more overt one, besides the Argus facility, some kind of Argus building actually showing up, and we talked about them, I think it was on the last episode, or at least the last one that Lila was on, Argus was mentioned, and it's kind of a S.H.I.E.L.D. esque group, for those familiar with the Marvel Universe. This is something DC's just invented in their current run of Justice League. Lila is revealed to use the code name Harbinger, which means this is in fact Lila Michaels, the character based off of the DC character Harbinger, which first showed up in the Crisis on Infinite Earths series, and was a trans-dimensional super being, which doesn't appear to be what this Lila is, because they are not doing that kind of stuff. But
and because she gets knocked out if you know, Diggle rescues her and she just passes out, so obviously
right,
she's
right.
Not too trans-dimensional.
right. So but it's great that, I mean, as soon as she used the code name Harbinger in their little hunt for Floyd Lawton, I was like, oh, that's awesome. So that was really cool. There was also a reference to Zan and Jaina, the Wonder Twins, which is just a kind of an offhanded nod to the old Super Friends cartoon. When Thea goes to get Roy out of jail after he had stolen the police radio, Detective Lance comes in and sees the two of them sitting there, and he goes, oh, well, look, it's the Wonder Twins, and, you know, kind of leaves it at that. But I thought that was kind of great, and that also, I think, kind of links it up, because the Wonder Twins were a pair of a brother and sister that had superpowers, and Zan, the boy, he could always take the form of water or ice or something having to do with water, and Jaina would be able to take the shape of some animal. Usually like a hawk, and then somehow there's a bucket that would form that would carry Zan. I don't know where the bucket, and they had the little...
The monkey would bring the bucket, wouldn't he?
Yeah, they had the monkey Gleek.
Ooh, that's good.
And but they were this brother and sister duo that helped the Super Friends out and often got into trouble and stuff like that. It was kind of the comic element for the Super Friends show from the late 70s, early 80s. So, which is why I think that it might be interesting to see Thea and Roy as a, you know, kind of a team up to be a sidekick rather than one or the other of them being the actual sidekick. So I think there might be some elements for that. So
would you like to see him adopt a space monkey?
That would be cool if it was a blue space monkey with a bandit mask. There was some live action show. Oh, I guess it was on the Wonder Twins were on Smallville at one point, and they did it, you know, in a much less cartoony way. But people were like, "Well, are they going to have a Gleek?" And I guess the phone case that the girl had like rhinestones all over it, and on the back it looked like a cartoon monkey, like Gleek. And so nice. That's how they got that into the show. And I think her ringtone had a little sound to it. So, and, you know, but that was when Smallville was really also getting pretty hokey too. So, but you know, they didn't do it as overt as people thought they might. So, but you know, that's just a little nod there. I like when they do this kind of stuff, 'cause it makes it so much more fun for fans like myself, at least, who have been reading the comics. And, you know, this stuff stands out. Other people might just go, oh, you know, they're just calling them Wonder Twins because, you know, they're always together or whatever and getting into trouble or something like that. But,
well,
you know.
And I'm a Wonder Twins fan. Well, okay, maybe not a fan, but I remember the Wonder Twins and didn't mind them back then. And I didn't catch it. So you're right. I mean, it's a nice, subtle little references to it that I do enjoy. And that's what makes it so fun to talk about too.
Yeah. So, well, you know, like I said, at the beginning of the show, we've only got three more episodes now. They're coming fast. Can we tell people the next episode? Is that, that's probably not too much of a spoiler, do you think?
I don't think that's a spoiler. That's promotion. You know, that's to get you excited for the next episode.
Well, the next episode, which I have not seen a trailer for yet. I know there are some clips floating around out there. The next episode is called The Undertaking. So here, this is it, kids. This is what everything has been building up to all season long. So I think we can expect to see a lot more Malcolm Merlyn, and this may also have some other surprises for us that I'm looking forward to. I saw a couple stills, so I don't want to talk about some other characters we might be seeing. And there's talk for towards the end of the season about some other guest appearances, or at least DC references that might be, let's just say, harbinger of things to come. So we'll have to see what's coming after that, but
that's about as subtle as the episode titles there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we only have to wait till what, like the middle of May here, and we'll be able to talk about all sorts of stuff and make all sorts of cool speculations in the off season.
That's right. Well, I'm excited, and yet I'm a little scared because I'm gonna have to wait so long to get more after that. But I'm just gonna enjoy these three that I got left. So
all right.
Good.
Well, anyway, so that's it for this week's episode of Green Justice.
We really hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Green Justice, and we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes. And also, you can contact us by email at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Also, come by our Facebook page at facebook.com/greenjustice podcast. I put something up there the other day. I heard some rumors of the producer saying, you know, never say never about superpowers on this show. So come by and give us your opinion on that. I'd like to see what you think about that.
Yeah, Josh, you've been doing a great job putting all sorts of cool links to articles, interviews, video links. I think the link to the Tonight Show spot that we talked about earlier with Stephen Amell is on the Facebook page. So thank you very much for doing all that. And
yeah, it's fun.
People come by and give us your opinion at facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast. And, of course, if you do enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.